Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. Captain Anthony Duff just walked into the studio. We're honored to have him here.
Yes.
Wow.
The New Haven Police Department. On Monday, August 12th, he was off duty on his way to the hospital where his first grandchild was born. And he saw a man fire a gun at another man. A shootout happened, and he was wounded, and we're happy to have him in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for having me, guys. Well,
thanks for coming.
Thanks for doing everything you've done.
Yes, thank you.
And we're so happy you're here right now and you're okay.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be here. I'm on the road to recovery. I've had a great system in place, starting with the first responders getting me to a first-rate trauma hospital. Folks over at Yale New Haven Hospital, kudos to them again for the great work that they do. And because of that, you know, less than 2 weeks, I was discharged from the hospital, and now I'm just working to get better each day, visiting nurses, physical therapists, a host of doctors' visits. But I am truly getting better, and I'm so thankful.
We're thankful for you and for everyone involved in that, men and women in New Haven Police Department and the first responders in the hospital.
Yep.
How bad were your wounds?
They were fairly significant. I was in critical condition without going into all the specific medical issues.
Were you shot multiple times?
You know, a couple of times, yes, sir.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
So bring us through that. You're walking and...
Well, I can't get into all the specifics
because
of it.
Because it's an open case?
It's an open case. It's an actual homicide investigation.
Gotcha.
So,
do they know who did it?
Well, again...
More secrets.
Right.
Well, okay, I gotcha. Yeah. All right.
Need to know basis.
Do people in the neighborhood know who did it?
There are some indications as to who the perpetrator is. And at this time, I would say there's no threat to the public. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
So investigators are doing a phenomenal job. Kudos to the New Haven Police Department, the investigative services, all the state and federal partners who work daily with the New Haven Police Department. And at some point, there will be an announcement or perhaps a press conference indicating the status of the case.
Gotcha. Bring us through the details that are known and can be discussed. So you get a call that your first grandchild was born, right?
So I have five kids. Three are adults and two are high schoolers. So I have my first grandchild, a three-week-old baby girl.
Oh,
congratulations.
Yes, yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Grandpa.
Yes, and that is... it's a phenomenal feeling, you know, as a first-time grandparent.
And now, was this your daughter or your daughter-in-law?
My daughter. My oldest daughter has a child.
Okay. And so did you know she was in the hospital having labor pains?
Oh, yes. I'd actually been there the day before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so okay. I've read and heard a number of different reports.
Right,
so,
that's what I'm working,
So on the day of the incident, actually, I'm just driving down the street. Driving down Dixwell Avenue, where I had previously worked as the neighborhood district manager. In New Haven, the city is divided up into community policing districts. One of those is the area of Dixwell Avenue from near Broadway or downtown going toward Hamden.
Right.
Now, several years back, I worked that neighborhood for 8 years. I actually had an office or like a substation, as
we
call it.
You're familiar with that area. You know people in that area.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I'm on this major thoroughfare around 9 in the evening, and I'm approaching a traffic light, a red light, and I look to my right, and I see a guy shooting another guy. And without going into all the specifics, I called it in, and I get out and intervene.
Are you in your uniform? Do you have a gun on you?
Yes. So I intervene, and without going again into all the specifics,
identify yourself as a police officer.
Yes. So the shooting of the other individual stopped. So I succeed in at least stopping that shooting part of it. But in the process, I am shot, and other officers respond, and
I'm transported to the hospital. A brand new grandfather, and on the job 24 years. When you take that bullet, do you think, "Oh, this could be really bad"?
Not at all. Thought never crossed my mind. Being a police officer, you're trained, and you do it for a number of years. It's instinctive what we do. No second thought.
So you knew
no
you were injured.
Guessing. Say again.
You knew you were injured, right?
At some point, I realize I'm injured, and then I have to stop and slow down and call it in that I'm injured and that I need assistance. But other officers are responding, but I have to alert them that I am, in fact, injured, significantly injured.
Yeah, we heard that call that you made, and you sounded pretty solid.
Yeah.
For a guy who was shot, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you're calling in your own officer down call.
Yes, sir. That is
correct. Yeah. I mean, that wasn't scary to you?
At some point with the adrenaline, you're able to carry through, but then the body kicks in and starts to shut you down.
Gotcha. Right.
And the important thing in a critical incident like that is to make sure others know that you're injured, because at any moment you could lose consciousness, you could just pass out. And I think that's probably what happened to me within moments of having made that call that I'm down.
So you passed out moments after that.
I remember bits and pieces, but I would say that, and not just in my case, but in any case where you're significantly injured or wounded, to immediately alert someone else and make a way for first responders to get to you.
Right.
Because that could be the difference between life and death.
Absolutely.
Fortunately, I have others responding to me, but in the event that someone is by himself or by herself, if you're injured, not necessarily a victim of a gunshot, but if you're ever injured, make sure that you can get the call in immediately and indicate where
you're going to be. Get help on the way.
Right.
So that someone can get to you, because those seconds, moments, or minutes could be the difference between making it and perhaps not making it.
So you called this in before you engaged this. So you see this shooting, you call it in. Then you get out and engage. And is there a gunfire back and forth between you and this person?
I'm not going to get into all the specifics, but I was wounded.
But so do you hear sirens come in before your shot? Like, is help on the way before?
I called it in, and I rely upon those first responders.
Right.
So I'll leave it at that.
Gotcha. So you passed out before you got into the ambulance?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, you don't remember.
It goes so fast,
yeah.
and with adrenaline. And remember, I don't know if you remember, but a gunshot can often cause trauma to the body. And so your parts of your body starts to shut down, and then the memory. So it's hard to say.
And so at no point during this did it occur to you that this could be your final moments?
I don't think I had that thought.
Right.
That's good.
That's good.
That's positive. Yeah.
Yeah. So the next memory is what? Waking up in the hospital?
Waking up at the hospital surrounded by family, coworkers, my colleagues from the New Haven Police Department, the police chief, the mayor, dozens of well-wishers. This is coming out of surgery. And from that point going forward, the outpouring of support locally.
Pretty amazing.
For my coworkers.
Oh, yeah.
City of New Haven. Private individuals, public individuals.
I wish
all
there was
across
this
the
kind
state,
of support for the police every day.
Police
should
departments.
Be.
And then from across the country. Other police departments. Retirees of law enforcement from local, my department, and from elsewhere. It's just been a tremendous amount of support. Organizations.
When you woke up in your room and opened your eyes and saw these people, did you know where you were? Were you like, Mayor, why are you in my bedroom?
Yeah, what happened? Yes. Am I dreaming?
Why are all you people in my house?
Get out of my room!
I woke up in a surgical recovery room, and it was just great seeing everyone. Knowing that I was being taken care of, and I remembered right away what had happened, and then the folks said, and by the way, now we're going to leave. We're going to walk out, and there are a couple of media folks out front, and we'll walk past them.
Right.
So that was the lead up to this. So I thanked the SWAT guys, and we walk out the hospital, and it was one of the most amazing sights. It reminded me of the. Remember the scene in the movie Rudy?
Right.
Where the dad goes to the stadium and he says, this is something to the effect of, this is the most amazing sight these eyes have ever seen. Well, I tell you, I walked out that hospital and I'm thinking that there would be a small gathering of local media, but it was amazing. what I saw when I walked through those doors.
Here you come right now. Here's
it was
Rudy
like a movie.
Thing.
Yeah.
We don't have that audio, do we, of the when Captain Duff left the hospital? Crowd, that's just what the mics are picking up.
And goose pimples here.
Yeah. Thanks for getting that, Phil. Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite an event.
Well, thanks for coming in. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Okay.
Everybody say hi, teacher.
Hi, teacher.
What are we going to learn today, teacher?
Today we're going to learn some history, geography, science, and some special extra facts.
Yeah!
Woo! I don't want to learn anything!
Okay.
I like baseball!
I want to be a truck driver.
Can we go play?
All right, we're going to start easy, and then we'll move on to the harder questions.
I prefer it that way. Thank you.
All right, the first question. The ancient Egyptian writing system was called what?
Scribble.
That thing where they carve the pictures in the pyramids?
Right, that thing.
Yeah, that.
Nobody has a guess?
Me.
Why are you raising your hand?
Chiseling.
Oh, no, I like raising hands. Ashley?
Yeah, but she's behind you. You can't see it.
me.
Yes, Ashley.
Hieroglyphics.
Very good.
Smarty
she's cheating. Cheater.
Yeah, she's cheating because she's smart.
No. You know the teacher.
She's looking at a screen right now.
All right, the next question.
Make her spell that.
Yeah, really. Yeah, spell it.
Hieroglyphics.
That's not fair. She saw this
beforehand. No, I didn't. I'm not looking at it.
Hold on. I swear to God.
You did see the questions on the guest card.
All right, the next question. Who is the author of the 1960 novel about social and racial inequality, To Kill a Mockingbird?
Oh, the guy who wrote the book.
Yeah.
That's who it was.
Oh, yes.
Huh.
You said it was the author, the guy who wrote the book.
I don't read books.
Technically, I'm right. The guy who wrote the book is the author, so I am right.
Well, how
James
did you know it was
Gunn.
A guy?
You didn't say what was the name of the person.
How
you
did
said,
you know
who
it was a
was
guy?
It? Assuming. I'm assuming guys, yeah, write, guys
sexist.
Write things. Guys write things.
You have to go to the office. You're going to be written up.
No.
Phil had an answer.
What was
James
it?
Gunn.
Incorrect.
James Gunn?
Wasn't it Harper Lee something?
Yes.
Harper Lee Collins.
Okay.
Now all of a sudden
she gets this one too. She spells hieroglyphics.
Harper Lee Collins?
Right.
Wait, why is that funny?
It's like a drink.
I don't get it.
No, publisher.
Harper Lee is correct, but it's not Harper Lee Collins. I don't know what that is.
I'm so dumb. I thought that was funny.
Oh, wait, what?
All right. She said way too much sugar already.
Isn't there a publishing company called HarperCollins?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, anyway.
All right,
it's funny in my mind.
I thought it was funny.
Wait, what's the right answer?
It.
Harper Lee is the correct answer.
Harper Lee.
Oh!
James.
Really?
Can we put her in the hallway?
Take that gold star and stick it over her mouth.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
James Gunn, by the way, is the guy that does all the Gardens for the Galaxy movies.
See, I knew you were making a joke, but we weren't going to get it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we have to
know that.
I have to make them more obvious.
Yeah. Second, third grade humor guy.
All right, next question is a geography question.
Oh, great, I'm done already.
Which country is both an island and a continent?
Hawaii!
I'm going to say... I'm going to say the island of China.
China is not an island.
Oh, yeah?
It will be when I'm done with it.
Exactly, right. Fire a couple of nukes over there.
Ashley?
Australia!
Australia is correct.
Again!
Plant!
Sisters.
She can't play.
Okay.
Really, get out of class.
Yeah.
Be a teacher.
Yeah, go to the office.
Go back to high school.
You're a duty head.
Right.
All right, we're going to get a little harder now.
Yeah, wouldn't she get reprimanded for making the rest of the class feel bad?
I think so, yes.
The rest of us feel bad.
I am not feeling good right now.
You can't have this person's class?
Exactly.
No. She's being smart. A know-it-all.
There's right. no winning here.
I thought there was
what
no
are you crushing?
Winning.
What are you crushing? She threw a piece of paper at me.
Nothing. I'm just...
If this is the answers... No, it's not. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, I need that back.
I thought you hand me evidence. Here you go. All right. Next.
All right. What is the largest organ of the body?
I can't say it on the radio.
You would in the classroom, though.
I would, definitely, yeah. The largest organ.
I couldn't send him to the principal. I would just have to ignore it and move on.
Really?
Yep.
Mm. There's no ignoring me.
Man, I'd have such a good time in school now.
Yeah, really. All the things. Oh, you say all kinds of crap. So you can't do nothing about it.
Biggest organ?
The intestine.
Nope.
No? Really?
It seems like a good answer.
Yeah, it's like miles.
Out
exactly.
Like a mile.
Exactly.
I like when the teacher encourages the student's wrong answer by going,
Yeah, what are you teaching? Jeopardy school?
No. Yeah. Say, let's try again.
At Jeopardy Elementary, yes.
Oh, let's try again.
Thanks, Alex Trebek.
I'd love that. Teachers used to do that.
Survey says.
Idiot Nano got it wrong again.
So it's not the intestines. Anybody else got a guess?
Well, I have what? Ashley?
I think Ashley has the answer.
What is it?
All right. This is a trick question. It's actually the skin.
As Ashley was like pointing to her skin, again, plant.
Most people think it's when you say that, you're thinking inside, but the largest organ is actually the skin.
Ashley, largest one is in some church in England.
Everyone say thank you, teacher.
Thank you, teacher.
Get it.
Chelsea, thanks for what you do.
Yes, thank
you. It takes a special person to sign up to be in a classroom with kids, and then the kids are fine. It's the parents and all of that. We appreciate you.
You need booze.
And teachers.
Yes, you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
You need drinks. Lots of drinks.
And Ashley, you cheat.
She did.
Uh-uh.
Made the rest of us feel bad.
Yeah, really.
We have to write an essay as to why you shouldn't make other kids feel bad.
My self-esteem is at an all-time low.
Chad said I have to write an essay.
Don't worry. Everyone gets participation trophies.
Yeah!
Another arrest in the missing mom case. Police arrested Photostulis again.
Yeah.
Another evidence tampering charge. The arrest warrant had a lot of new details. And attorney Matt Maddox is on the show now to go over some of those. Anything stick out to you?
What I keep on thinking about is the alibi script. That's fascinating. Obviously, the whole back and forth between Photostulis and his project manager about the seats in the Tacoma, that jumps out at me, right?
Right.
Which it seemingly went over a period of several days. He's allegedly kind of cajoling his project manager about these seats. You got to get rid of these seats. Those two things really jump out at me. The blood evidence, of course, is very dramatic. But the seats and the alibi scripts and the notes that these two allegedly put together about the timeline and creating a narrative is pretty stunning.
The timing of this is interesting. Everyone is back to school, back to work, back to the routine, away from summer vacation time.
Yeah.
So you have the public's attention. That very first week, the public's back. They come out and they charge him again. That's not a coincidence.
It may not be a coincidence. I do think, though, I don't know what the timing is of the state laboratory producing the blood evidence. It will be really, really interesting to learn how long they've had that blood evidence, the DNA analysis. Is it something that just coincidentally arrived days before everybody's back in school? As you said, the public's back in town. I don't know, but that's a good point.
The arrest warrant, does that get them back into the house? Or that's just an arrest warrant, not a search warrant?
It's only an arrest warrant, right?
Okay. He doesn't know this arrest is coming, right? Because I talked to Norm somewhere in the afternoon, and he said, they arrested him. I'm not sure why yet.
Yeah, no, I think he got blindsided. I think they both were blindsided.
Is this timeline that they have, is this enough to charge him with murder and then convict him?
Is enough, sure. I mean, it depends upon your jury. It depends upon your panel. You know, if they're putting this defendant in front of a jury panel right now in Stamford, it may be enough to convict him. I would prefer to see still more links in this chain. What disturbs me here is, and what differentiates this from other murder prosecutions where there isn't a body, is the two vehicles here, right? You've got the Tacoma leaving, traveling north at a certain point on the morning, a late morning, and you've got the Suburban going in a different direction. Who's driving the Suburban? And that's different than a wood chipper case. That's different than other no-body cases where there isn't necessarily the possibility of a second player.
Right. So that's a problem for you because that question hasn't been answered.
It's a big problem, and if I'm a defense attorney, it's a big opportunity for creating reasonable doubt.
So one of the things that they had in this warrant was a picture of Jennifer, and it's the last known picture of her around 8:05, about to walk into her house.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that Fotis was probably somewhere hiding. And then that the crime took place in the house. And then they believe he took and cleaned up the site. They found a little bit of his blood mixed with her blood on the kitchen sink. Hard to explain, but possible, right? To explain that away?
It's hard, but it's possible. And by the way, just as an aside, I don't ever want to see, as a defense attorney, I don't want to hear or read a law enforcement affiant, that is, the person who has drafted the warrant and presenting it to a judge, I don't want to hear or read the word, I believe, or we believe. That's not evidence. If their theory is he's lying in wait, that's a fine theory, but that has no place in a warrant.
Right. So that bothered you.
Yeah, it did. I don't like that. It churns. It because it's coming from a law enforcement person, it's easy to infer that this is fact, that there's a reason for this, and maybe there is, but there should be nothing about conjecture or theorizing or belief in a warrant application.
Just fact.
Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so they could have went from, here's the last known photo of her. We have blood evidence in the garage. You have to say we believe there was a struggle there, right? Because you have blood evidence, it doesn't mean there was a struggle.
But I think that there's a way to phrase that. If the blood evidence and there's a I'm sorry for being so clinical, but if there's a splatter pattern, if there's a blood pattern that is consistent with a struggle, then that's what you say.
Right.
You don't say we believe it was a struggle.
Okay. Right. Consistent with a struggle, and then now you have his blood and her blood mixture on the sink.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Yes.
And then you have that red pickup truck parked 100 feet away from where her vehicle was found,
mm-hmm.
in that park. That's big.
I agree. And as I said, then you've got the two vehicles leaving at separate times, and Fotis Doulos can't drive two cars at the same time.
Right. So they were leaving at separate times?
Well, that's a good point. This is what I'm inferring. They're leaving separately. They're leaving separately.
Right.
At the same time?
Don't know.
Right. So my theory a while back was Fotis acted alone, drove the truck to the park,
mm-hmm.
jogged to the house, probably with a ball cap and glasses to disguise himself, hid there, waited for her, perpetrated the crime, did the cleanup, put the body and the things in the car, in her car,
mm-hmm.
probably wore the disguise, drove to the park, made the switch to the truck. Yeah, something of that nature.
Right.
And then that was a while back, and then now it sounds like that's what the police are saying as well.
It may be. I'm disturbed by the two vehicles. I'm disturbed by what could be a theory of a second involved individual.
Police said that this guy who owns the red truck, his cell phone data suggests that he couldn't be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enough to eliminate someone? Just that they were on the phone at certain times and the phone was pinging somewhere?
I think that's very, very strong evidence that they were not in another location, of course, you know, you leave a phone in somebody else's possession or you leave a phone at another location and you travel elsewhere, that's also a possibility. So by itself, I don't think it's enough to eliminate him.
Do you think that the state has more evidence now, but they're kind of doing this in a one step at a time, not like throw everything at him? Let's just release what we need to just to keep this thing moving.
Well, look, I feel as though my suspicion is that there is further forensic evidence that they're waiting on in order to fill in that chain of evidence that we've spoken about previously. There's no reason to keep a case moving. There's nothing in the practice book, there's nothing in Connecticut statutes or normal procedure that compels a case to keep moving. So I don't know what the motive is, frankly, behind arresting him on the tampering charge now. If there's a murder charge coming, there certainly would be nothing wrong with keeping everybody waiting, waiting until all the ducks are lined up, and then hitting him with a murder warrant and the other tampering warrant.
Does this other charge have him going through the court system, and it keeps him in the court system, keeps him in Connecticut, keeps him close, and can potentially, through witnesses and cross-examinations, unveil more stuff that'll eventually lead to this answer?
That's certainly a possibility. I think that I think this is a much more subtle way, frankly, of both really, in a sense, penalizing him, punishing him, giving him some pain, and in a very subtle, very intelligent, strategic way, re-educating the public in a way that is very different than how Norm Pattis has gone about this.
And how is that?
Well, I mean, Norm is pretty theatrical. He's pretty dramatic. He makes a lot of statements. Here we have a 40-page warrant, something of that nature. It's a very long warrant application, which then is a matter of public record, and it is a much more sophisticated, more publicly consumable way to get information to the public.
There's a quote in the warrant. 5 days after the disappearance, Fotis had the vehicle cleaned. And then in an interview with police, Michelle Tacronis allegedly said he had the truck washed, quote, because the body of Jennifer at some point was in there.
So I haven't read the warrant application. I've read a couple of different accounts of that quote. My sense is that quote is her surmising that that's why he wanted the car cleaned or detailed or the seats removed. That happens, what, on the second or third go-around with the police where she's confronted with inconsistencies. My sense is that is not a Fotis Dulo speaking, but her saying to police, well, this is why I surmise he had the car cleaned.
Oh, like theory, yeah.
So they asked her, why do you think he got the truck cleaned?
Right. Yeah. Well,
and then she answered the question, and that answer was good enough for them to put it in there to...
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Which... lead you to believe that she feels like he did it.
Yeah.
And this is the person closest to him at the time. This is the person who was in Hartford that night dropping garbage bags. This person believes he did it. That's what they're saying, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We talked about this before, and it still doesn't make sense to me. How is she? So she's still in trouble. She's on the hook, right? She's not cooperating, because if she was cooperating, she would say, yeah, I knew exactly what we were doing in Hartford with those garbage bags.
Yeah, this still really fascinates me too. To what extent has she really cooperated? I mean, this is from some very, very useful information. Her opinion is useful, although it may be just opinion about, you know, why getting that car cleaned. But how does a fiance living with someone on this terribly bizarre and disturbing trip not know what's going on?
Right. Now, one question asked.
Right.
So if you're a defense, not a defense, but if you're the prosecutor at this point, you can really line out almost everything that happened, right? Mm-hmm. Horrible divorce. I mean, the worst. Money, kids, passion, 2 years in the court system, tons of money going to lawyers, right? The husband is not accounted for at this time. He's using a guy's truck, allegedly. That truck turns out to be in the area where she disappears, right? Then that then he's saying the truck seat should be changed. The truck should be cleaned. Let me borrow the truck this weekend. You could take my truck. Then that night, he is allegedly in Hartford dumping garbage bags with her blood evidence, the victim, who we think is the victim. We don't know where she is. Blood evidence there. And this whole timeline, like all of this, what do we need now? So they found they think they know where the murder weapon was, right? It was a knife that was found by a druggie who sold it, traded it for crack for a drug dealer, and they can't find the drug dealer now.
Yeah, he traded the knife to a guy named Fudge, right?
Fudge.
Right.
Yeah. And then, so now it's the body. Where's the body? And then you almost have your whole, what else are you going to get?
I think they could bring this forward to a warrant application. And I think that, I think the warrant application might even be, maybe I'll even go so far as to say probably would be signed. I just know that State Attorney's office, and I know that that office is would rather have and probably is waiting for yet more to fill in that timeline, whether it's testimony or whether whether conventional witness testimony or whether it's forensic evidence.
Right. So maybe these charges of tampering with evidence is to keep him in the system until this stuff comes to light.
It could very well be. I mean, he's already in the system. Your intimation earlier in the conversation, is it a way to prompt others to cooperate? That could be as well.
And now, if he gets convicted of one of these charges, he could do time, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So now you got your guy sitting in jail, and it gives you a year, two, or three. It gives you some breathing room to put things together, right?
Well, I mean, these are 5- and 10-year felonies, right? So you put them all together. I think now he's looking at 20 years if he were convicted and maxed out on all of the charges.
Right. And then figure he's in the court, the case is in the court system for 2 years.
Sure.
Right. All right. Hey, attorney, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Attorney Matt Maddox. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good, morning. Thank you. Connecticut's most infamous concerts. Which ones would you put on that list?
Well, I got to put Stones at Toads probably as number one in my head, but also the Eagles at the Yale Bowl because that was 70,000 attendees that could never be matched because there's no venue big enough to match that.
Did you know that day, or I mean, leading up to that, it was going to be 70,000, or was it one of those just everybody showed up?
Oh my God!
Well, we knew because of advanced sales it was going to do that, but when I booked it, I never thought it would do 70,000 people. I mean, that's major market numbers, and we're in little old New Haven, Connecticut.
Right.
So I never thought it would do that, but as tickets were selling. It was a good show. It was a little River Band opening, Hart in the middle, and the Eagles headlining. So it was
crazy.
A good show. But 70,000 is ridiculous. The other concert that was bigger that was the biggest until that time was the shows at Cole Park, which had 30,000 capacity.
Wow!
Right. And that's the show that Joe Walsh passed out at. Right. They had to like revive him with ice water.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always mean it.
Was that your first show at Yale?
At the Yale Bowl, it was my first show. I've done a ton of shows at Woolsey Hall.
Okay.
But it was my first and only show at the Yale Bowl.
Yeah. I remember you were going to bring Paul McCartney in, right?
Yeah, that's probably the most famous concert that never happened in Connecticut.
Right. Yeah. So they have this great show, 70,000 people. What were some of the issues with that concert? Were you getting phone calls backstage or however they communicated with you, walkie-talkie, like parking, like traffic.
Need more tickets.
Bathrooms,
more
garbage cans. Right. Was there any of those problems with the Eagle Show?
Well, parking is always a problem at the Eagle because it's in the middle of a really rich neighborhood, and there are very few parking lots. So for parking, if you figure three to a car, you need over 20,000 parking spaces. There's nowhere near 20,000 parking spaces around the Yale Bowl. So we had people parking downtown, and we had buses taking people to the Yale Bowl. So parking was always a problem, and it's always difficult at the Yale Bowl when you have so many non-students because, you know, it was during the summertime. So
yeah.
There were very few non-students there. So parking was a big problem. The Eagles were not the easiest guys to deal with, which had been the case back then.
And this was right after Hotel California.
Yeah, it was a long-run tour, though.
Oh,
it was a long-run tour.
Right. Kind of had an attitude back then.
So you're right. It was after Hotel California, but it was still the long-run tour,
right,
which was the follow-up album. And but, you know, it was during the drug-crazed days that everybody was involved in where nobody was really sane at the moment. So those days, thankfully, have changed.
Okay, so Stones at Toads, Eagles Heart, Little River Band at Yale Bowl. Who else would you put on that list?
Well, I think the double Springsteen shows at Rentschler Field, the Stones at Rentschler Field, I think the Rentschler Field and the Police at Rentschler Field, I think the Rentschler Field shows were pretty historic are one stadium that we had that we've been unable to bring artists back in there, but we're not giving up. But
what happened with that, may I ask?
Yeah, well, what basically happened is that stadium shows now are in bigger stadiums. If you see us, other than Fenway Park, which is a classic great stadium that artists want to play because it's a great classic stadium like Wrigley Field, but if you really are looking at making a lot of money, which artists are when they play stadiums, they stay away from 30,000-seat stadiums, which is what Rentschler Field is, and they go to the big 50 to 60,000-seat stadiums like Gillette or MetLife. Again, Fenway, Wrigley, they're historic, so they carry their own weight. The money isn't as important. It's the presence of playing in that stadium that's more important to the artist.
The artists, do they make any money off of concessions, or just it's all about T-shirts and stuff at that point?
Yeah, no, it's all about T-shirts, all about ticket sales, and that's okay. About the only way they make money.
Yeah, then you'll eat a hot dog.
Yeah, no, actually it's the promoter in the building that make money off hot dogs and beer and parking. It's because the artist gets most of the money from ticket sales now.
Now, the artist, when you sign an artist to, let's just say, boss Bruce Springsteen for Rentschler Field, is that a guarantee? And then, in addition to that, how does that work?
Yeah, it's a guarantee. Plus, if they reach a certain point in gross ticket sales, they get a percentage of that on top of it. And so they have they have a double win opportunity. The first win is you're getting a certain guarantee amount of money to play. The second part is if you sell tickets, you get even more money. It's a good system. It is a good system that way.
What is the biggest guarantee you guaranteed?
I think the biggest guarantee probably was to Justin Timberlake at Mohegan Sun.
Ah,
really? JT.
I wouldn't have put him on. I would have thought like the boss or whatever you were guaranteeing McCartney before that.
Yeah, one of those guys, not JT, yeah.
Or the Stones or...
Times, you're right. They're bigger artists, but the times were different. Ticket prices were lower. And guarantees are definitely tied to ticket prices. So when an artist, when a fan complains about a ticket price, it's usually dictated by the guarantee that the artist is getting. I would love low ticket prices because I want more people in my house so they drink the beer, drink the soda, and park the car.
Yeah.
And the more people that do that, the more money I make.
Gotcha.
Right. Okay, Justin Timberlake. May I ask what that was?
And you know what? I actually think U2 was bigger.
Really?
I just realized that. Yeah, I could never. If I mentioned how much it was, you'd never see them play Connecticut again.
You can't divulge.
Oh, really?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What could you buy for it?
A home in Greenwich.
Very nice. Yeah. Okay, cool.
I heard, and I won't get into it because I know you don't want to, but somebody told me that McCartney was offered $1 million for Mohegan Sun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, yeah.
That's a gimme?
Yeah, that's a whole different...
We'd offer more.
Right.
$1 million is not the biggest guarantee of the year anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's in his couch cushions, actually.
Oh, wow.
Look, I filmed, a million. Look at this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll leave it at that.
Right.
And I wanted to talk about the most infamous concerts in Connecticut. We got some on the list here. The Stones, the Toads, the Eagles, Heart Little River Band, McCartney, the most famous concert that never happened.
Right.
And then Boss and Police and others at Rentschler Field. Was there any other shows you wanted to add? I mean, definitely Jim Morrison, New Haven, or the Doors at New Haven Coliseum. Or
New Haven Arena.
Arena.
Yes, that was, I was in college then in Ohio, so I was not at that show, but that is probably the most famous concert that ever happened in Connecticut throughout the country.
Really?
Yeah, when he got arrested, yeah, and he exposed himself. And
all that.
Yeah, I knew the cop that did it, and he really wasn't a bad guy, but it was the late 60s, and things were different. You know, the war was going on, and people were on edge at that time. But
right.
The cop really wasn't a bad guy. He did overreact, but he wasn't a bad guy.
And we'll get to that list another time, because folks are calling us. Steve from Madison, Bob Seger, was there any film of the Eagles at Yale? All right, so he wants to know Bob Seger, which you get asked every time you're on.
Yep.
And then he wants to know, is there any film of the Eagles at Yale Bowl?
No film. The only thing is, if you buy the Eagles live album, inside's a poster of the Yale Bowl concert taken from a prop plane above that we sent up to take a picture of it. And so if you buy the Eagles live album from, I think, 1980 or 81, you'll get a poster. If you can find that, I guess times have changed. Everything's streaming now. But it's a poster of the Yale Bowl, and I got sued by Yale University because it said Yale Bowl on the scoreboard, and I did not get their permission to put the poster in. And I explained to them I didn't put the poster in. The Eagles didn't. If you want to sue the Eagles, have fun. You'll be the most hated school in the world.
Right.
So they didn't sue the Eagles, and they dropped the lawsuit against me.
There you go, see?
Funny. That was good tactic. The album cover sees their name and says, that's not supposed to be there.
I can't believe I'm being advertised right now. For God's sake, free press.
Is there a track from the live album that is Yale, the Yale show?
Not at all.
No.
Just a great poster.
And do you, Jimmy, do you remember that concert? And was it a moment like, wow, these guys sound great tonight, or not so much?
Oh, no, it was great, but the moment I think of the Eagles sounding great really was their first appearance, what we call the Meadows, which is now Xfinity, which I believe was 1996. That I remember it being very special. Their sound was perfect. My heart swelled. I love the Eagles. I really the Yale Bowl was so hard to run and so hard to do. And I was 30 years old trying to struggle through the whole thing. I'd never done a show with so many people that I did not really watch much of the show.
We did have the Joe Walsh story, too, that AJ touched upon. But Joe Walsh passed out, and then the Eagles weren't going to go on. And then your security guy took Joe Walsh, dipped his nuts in a bucket of ice, woke him up. And then they all went out and they played. So you came very, very close to not having the Eagles on stage, which would have been not great.
And he sang really high-pitched that day, too.
Well, we were talking to Howard, who I believe was the lead guitarist of Heart at the time, to see if he could play guitar parts as a backup in case Joe...
That's how close it was.
Yeah.
That's how close.
Not that he could do it. We never reached the point because, may he rest in peace, but Rick Renz came up with this great idea of how he could wake Joe Walsh up.
Right. It was something he wanted to try on someone for a long period of time.
Wait, you're going to dip his nuts in a bucket of ice?
Let me get this straight. You want a bucket of ice for his nuts?
He woke up.
Okay.
He woke up.
Yeah.
Let's see. Keith and Seymour wanted to ask Jimmy if you ever had to deal with Ace Frehley.
Oh, yeah, in Kiss and not in Kiss, because he lived in Westchester County, so he used to come up to see our concerts at the New Haven Coliseum quite often. If he liked the band, he had a DeLorean.
Oh,
and he
cool.
used to drive up in his DeLorean.
Well, spaceman, space-looking vehicle, it works.
And I wonder why Keith is asking this question. Let me just check. Keith, are you trying to get some dirt on Ace Frehley, or you know something, or why do you ask? All right. He's listening to Jimmy's answer right now.
Yep.
Which is 16 seconds behind.
Thank goodness with the mouth I have, that's a smart idea.
Right. That's why I put it on, Jimmy.
And Kate from Oakville wants to know about the Scorpions.
The rumor is Scorpions are going to tour, continue their final tour for the ninth year in a row, I think it is. And we are trying to figure out how to get them into Mohegan Sun. But that won't be until next year sometime if it happens.
Oh, nice.
9 years of final tour. It's amazing. Did they forget how to go home? Or
the final tour is longer than their relevancy.
Exactly, right.
And I like the Scorpions.
Oh, I love the Scorpions. But nine freaking years.
That's a long time.
That's a
great line.
Goodbye already.
So we heard that you were on stage for the Santana show, telling people to come in under the top. And
you say in Spanish, or?
Yes, I was on stage, and thankfully Sharon Osbourne wasn't there to yell at me about it. we had a lightning storm about to pass over, so for the first time since Ozfest, I got on stage, and I asked everybody from the lawn to come into the pavilion or into the lobby for about 45 minutes so nobody gets hit by lightning, and it worked out.
Jimmy said, oye, ¿cómo va?
Do you get a kick out of going on stage still?
Yes. I don't do it anymore because I feel I'm everybody's grandfather looking now, but I do get a kick out of it. It's the people that make me live the way I live, so I appreciate every one of them. So I'm very happy to be out there.
Awesome. That's fun. I get a kick out of seeing you in shows. There's been a couple of times, I think, Springsteen at Mohegan Sun, I saw you come out like right before he went on, and I'm like, oh, you know.
It's Jimmy!
Well, you think about all the shows he has seen.
Right.
Right, so you know when he comes out to sit down, it's a show. He wants to be over here.
It's Jimmy.
Out with us and not backstage talking to people.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I was
Jimmy.
At the Who this past Sunday night at Madison Square Garden as a fan.
Right. And what did you think about the Who?
Spectacular.
Really, still?
With a 40-piece orchestra, they opened up with 10 minutes of Tommy. It was truly spectacular, I thought.
Nuts. All right, so I think Ashley's going to see you this weekend for Zac Brown.
Good deal.
Nice.
Awesome.
Right. All right. Well, thank you, Jimmy. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Okay, great, guys. Have a good week.
Thanks, Jimmy.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.